Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join out on the phone, online, or via text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at wdws.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
And happy Monday morning to you. Welcome in, everybody. I'm glad to be with you here as we make our way to the rest through the rest of this mid-morning. I'm Scott Beatty, as Gene said there, filling in for Brian, who's back tomorrow, scheduled day off for Brian, as he's, I suppose he deserves from time to time. Ed Bond is our producer-engineer, and as always here on the program, we welcome you to join us. 356-9397 is the number to call. Castle Heating, Cooling, and text line 351-5357. Email talk at wdws.com. You can also tweet at me as well. I'm at Scott_Beatty, Beatty. We get run down what we're doing here today. Between now and the bottom of the hour, it's an open line, and as you are probably accustomed to, that means pretty much any direction you want to go regarding what's going on in the world or something on your mind or questions, anything in that regard. At 9:30, we'll welcome to the program U of I Law Professor Robin Fretwell Wilson. She is leading a project called Tolerance Means Dialogue and getting groups together, particularly on universities that usually have some competing values, and getting them to talk with each other. Lately, it's really been in the area of LGBT rights and religious rights as well, and how those two can conflict sometimes, or they don't have to. So we will talk about that with her, and we'll welcome your calls on the subject matter as well. 10 o'clock, we'll open it back up again for an open line on anything you want to do. And then at 10:30, I'm going to try something out here with my friend and our director of IT here. It's Darren Holt. He runs information technology department for the News Gazette and News Gazette Media and our radio stations. He runs the whole thing. And gotten to know Darren over time, an interesting guy, and has some good thoughts on how to help life go along in the tech side of things. And you don't have to be like him. You don't have to know all the ins and outs of complex IT systems to improve your life technically in some regards. And he'll take your questions too. Maybe you've got something you want to know how to do better with tech or how to solve a problem. He may be able to help you. Maybe it's at-home computing or something like that. So we'll welcome your calls on that if you got any questions on tech or computing for Darren. And if he can't help you, he may make something up for you. I don't know. We'll see. So that's what's coming up here on the program. And there was a lot that has been going on this past week. I was in Madison, Wisconsin the last couple of days with the Illinois softball team in the Big Ten tournament. And unfortunately, they bowed out after a Friday night walk-off loss. But Friday was an interesting day. You know, I've been to a few sports events now in my life, but this was a first. They brought a helicopter in to dry off the field there in Madison, Wisconsin. Madison was just cold and rainy all day long on Monday. It was really miserable. They had to get these games in on the tournament, so they finally got the first game of the day going in the afternoon. And this was the game prior to Illinois. Well, they finally got it going with a window. I think they resumed the play about 5 o'clock. And then they said, at 6 o'clock, we're going to shut the game down and we're bringing in a helicopter to dry off the field. I thought they were kidding. They were not. 6 o'clock, public address announcer, she got on and said, everyone, please evacuate the stadium. And a few minutes later, here comes a helicopter. It lands smack in the middle of the infield and then starts to get up and hovers over the ground about 10 feet above and covered every square inch of the playing surface and the outfield grass and got that thing dried off. It was pretty remarkable. Never seen it before. It was a huge hairdryer. And then it started to rain again, of course. Somebody said that thing cost about $600 an hour to use. I don't know what the actual price was, but the Big Ten needed to get this tournament in because it it was important to get all the games in to determine who could make the NCAA tournament on Sundays. So we all had fun with that. Of course, there's a lot of administrator types running around saying everybody has to get as far away as possible. They have to worry about the liability and the insurance and all that. It was almost like nobody had ever been within 300 yards of a helicopter before. I get it. You have to keep everything safe. You don't want anything to happen with a patron in case the rotors kick up something. But it was really funny. Anyway, so that's what happened. And then Friday night, we finally got the game going about 7:50, and Illinois lost Indiana 2-1, the final. They're not going into the NCAA tournament, unfortunately. That would have been a 3-in-a-row first time in program history, but still 37 wins for Tyra Perry's squad. That's really good. And that's fifth most in program history, so congrats on that. And a lot of key pieces coming back next year, and they could make a bid for the NCAAs again. All right, in the world of news here, the big thing today, U.S. Embassy is opening up in Jerusalem. And you can imagine there is some conflict around that. It's controversial. Some folks are applauding this. A lot of the folks in Palestinians don't like it. Welcome your thoughts on that. Is this a good day or bad day in that regard? You can weigh in on that. Donald Trump this morning saying he wants to now help out the Chinese telecom company ZTE because of sanctions that would otherwise cripple that company and cost jobs, he says. Over the weekend, Senator Lindsey Graham said the White House should apologize for a, quote, disgusting remark about John McCain, in which an aide said that he is dying anyway. So those are some of the things that are going on that you are more than welcome to weigh in on. How about this in sports? Men's tennis advancing to the Sweet 16, and Brad Dancer getting his 275th win over the weekend as well. So he becomes the all-time winningest coach in Illinois men's tennis history. And Illinois men's golf has started already regional play in Columbus as they look to make an entrance again into the NCAA national round. So that's some of what's going on. We're off and running here on a Monday after Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. Post a little bit to all the moms out there. Appreciate you. Weigh in here on an open line. We're off and running here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. May 14th, happy birthday, George Lucas, born this day, 1944. He is 74 years old. And Star Wars, boy, that first one came out just before 1980, didn't it? Or was it a little bit before, a few years before? In the late 70s, anyway. Wow, what a remarkable thing that he created. So happy birthday to George Lucas. We're back on A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. Coming up at the bottom of the hour after the news, we'll talk with Robin Fretwell-Wilson. She's a U of I law professor aiming to help encourage dialogue. It's a project called Tolerance Means Dialogue. We'll talk with her and issues in the law regarding protecting LGBT rights and protecting religious rights at the same time. And you can certainly call in with your thoughts or questions for her on that. Over the weekend in the News Gazette, a group of former county board members, Republicans and Democrats alike, inked a letter supporting the sale of the nursing home and basically saying our options are either to sell it and have it run or lose all of its services because the whole thing is going to go belly up with the financing situation. Wonder what you think on that. Is it time to just sell it outright? Interesting that pretty unified approach there between the two parties at the local level. Repurposing some of the Unit 4 farmland. You remember Unit 4 bought that farmland up off Interstate Drive to put up a new high school, and instead a referendum passed where they're redoing Central and putting on additions and refurbing Centennial High School, among a lot of other things, at $3.2 million plot of land. So Unit 4 going to use some of it and leave most of it for farmland that the United Way is using, but they're going to use some of it to store some dirt and other things as they tear up Tommy Stewart Field. That's one of the stories today from education reporter Lindsay Jones in the News Gazettes. And our very own Tim Dittman talking about a new proposed law in Monticello that would add a do not knock list. You know, the do not call list. What about a do not knock list? You can say, I don't want to be solicited at all at my door. I was thinking about that. I thought, I don't get door-to-door solicitations that much. That used to be a really common thing. Election time, got one or two knocks at the door, somebody campaigning. Got somebody at the beginning of the year, beginning of spring, that was promoting their yard work. Other than that, haven't gotten a whole lot. I guess a couple of kids, now that I think about it, have come by raising money for a school thing or their sports league, that kind of thing. So I'm just wondering if that's necessary, even. Is that sort of an overreach to set that up? You can, apparently, if you get on this do not knock list and then somebody comes and solicits at your door, you can call police and they will go find them, and they can fine them up to, I believe it's like $750. Is that all necessary or not in your mind? I don't get a lot of knocks at my door that much. I don't see it that much of a nuisance. It's not like the telemarketer list. That used to be a really big problem. I think the do not call list has sort of brought that down some. So I'm curious your thoughts on what you experienced. Do you find those people at the doors a nuisance or just a whatever type of thing? You can weigh in on that. It's an open line here, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. More in some sports. Jonathan Wells, Illinois track and field member with a first place in the high jump title in the Big Tens. First time an Illini's done that since 1958. So congratulations to Jonathan Wells, and he had the third best high jump in the nation. And the NBA playoffs, LeBron James with a dud for Cleveland against Boston. They lose handily, and LeBron just shows up with 15 points. It's kind of an unusual performance for LeBron James lately, so that's some of what's going on in sports. It's Penny for your thoughts. Open line here this morning, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. We're back with more in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian.
923 on A Penny for Your Thoughts. Good morning. I'm Scott Beatty. I'm filling in for Brian Barnhart. He is back tomorrow and the rest of the week. Hope you're doing well. You can join us here for an open line in this portion of the program. 356-9397, and the Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Just in, the U.S. Supreme Court has approved sports betting out in New Jersey. So that is breaking news, as now the federal ban on state-run sports betting is unconstitutional, and that paves the way for more sports betting. Pretty interesting. What is your thought on that? Do you like sports betting being something that could be a lot more pervasive? My concern with it is, will it lead to eventual problems and corruption and that kind of thing? It has been in other parts of the world, and I don't know the ins and outs of all that, but I know that that has at times cost been very costly to the purity of a game. So I know it happens and people do it all the time, but maybe it's just underground, and now this is just more out in the open and more, maybe it's, you know, more regulated, and maybe that's better. U.S. Supreme Court will allow more states to legalize sports betting. The announcement will likely break up Nevada's monopoly on the practice. All right, 20 years ago today, it was the end of an epic series on NBC.
I can think of nothing more fitting than for the four of you to spend a year removed from society.
That was from the finale of Seinfeld. Can you believe it? It ended 20 years ago today, and it's for as good as that show was, the finale was not that good for a lot of the fans. They tried to bring back every character that had ever been a part of the show and see the cast, the main characters, finally get what was coming to them. Remember, they were arrested for not doing anything when somebody was being bullied and robbed on a street corner. And it was a Good Samaritan law type of thing. They end up in jail for a year at the end of the whole thing. A lot of people felt the finale fell flat, and it was a two-part series. There was a lot of build-up to it, and it never really satisfied Seinfeld fans, unlike the rest of the show. But I mean, hard to believe, 20 years ago today, and it's, of course, Seinfeld is still in syndication all over the place, and I love the show. It's just, I think, one of the top two or three television shows of all time, and part of, you know, it's part of a cultural lexicon now. Well, fans are rejoicing after Brooklyn Nine-Nine got picked up by NBC for a sixth season. This was on Fox, and Fox had abruptly canceled the show, and there was this huge social media outrage about the whole thing. I really like this show. I think it's really funny. Andy Samberg, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he's the main character in the show and the main actor. The Brooklyn Nine-Nine co-creator Mike Schur and the show's cast took to social media on Friday to celebrate the win when NBC picked it up, and the creator Schur tweeted, "This happened because the fans of the show went berserk. Hey, you were going to go berserk with disappointment if Brooklyn Nine-Nine got taken off the air either way. The fact that helped the show get picked up is the best possible outcome. So congrats, berserkers. You do it." Pretty cool. The power of social media these days, when Fox canceled it, and to see the swell of people that wanted a TV show to keep going, and NBC saw the opportunity and said, yeah, we'll take one at that if these people are this much committed to the show. It's a show that's in syndication, too, so it was a little bit of a head-scratcher why Fox canceled that show. So a lot of the actors were tweeting about that, too, and thanking fans. Terry Crews thanks Star Wars star Mark Hamill for using his platform to intercede on behalf of the show. Saturday, the actor said on the series, tweeted at Mark Hamill, "I want to personally thank you, Mark, for using the power of the Force to save Brooklyn Nine-Nine." And he says, asterisk, wipes dirt off shoulder. So that's some of what is going on there in the world of television. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, really funny show, very quick, witty dialogue. It's very fast-paced, a lot of punchlines that are within punchlines that are within punchlines and that kind of thing. I happened to catch an episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show in syndication a few days ago, and it's just interesting to see the pacing of a show like that, which was very popular and a great television show, and my parents used to watch reruns, so that's how I got on it. But the pacing of a show like that, the amount of ground they cover in a plot in whatever it is, 22 minutes in a half-hour show compared to what they will cover now in a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's incredible. And I remember reading that there's been studies done now on the pace of dialogue and how quickly people talk in television shows has greatly increased over the years. West Wing was one of the first shows that it was notable where people were talking much quicker, a lot was happening, very dense dialogue, covering a lot of ground in a very quick amount of time. Compare that with the old shows and how much the plot advances or doesn't advance in just a few minutes. All right, coming up right after the news here, Robin Fretwell Wilson is here from the U of I. She is a law professor, and she is leading a project called Tolerance Means Dialogue. It's aimed at bringing together students and thought leaders for more constructive approaches to contentious issues, and she will be with us for a half hour. She specifically focuses on the rights, among other things, rights of LGBT and rights of the faith community when it comes to those types of issues. So be interested to hear her thoughts, and you can weigh in as well. 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. And then at 10 o'clock, we'll do an open line. It's open to whatever direction you want to go. At 10:30, get your tech questions ready. Darren Holtz, our IT director here at News Gazette Media, will share some of his life hacks, and he'll take your questions. So whatever you want there. Penny for your thoughts. Time for local news with the latest. Here's Michael Kaiser.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397. Email talk at wdws.com or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
Welcome back, A Penny for Your Thoughts on this Monday morning. I'm Scott Beatty in for Brian Barnhart. Illinois men's golf in regional play out in Columbus, Ohio. They are 4-under in the first day of play. There's 3 days to this. They lead the field just by a shot collectively. Nick Hardy is one of the top individuals. He's at 2-under right now through 8 holes. And Dylan Meyer is senior teammate, also at 2-under. So we're watching that as the day goes along. Best of luck to Mike Small's squad. Easy enough for you to say. All right, pleased to welcome to the program here Robin Fretwell-Wilson. She's a professor of law at the University of Illinois. She directs the College of Law's Family Law and Policy Program. And among the things she specializes in is law and religion. And she's also the author of 11 books, was recently honored as one of the 150 for 150 in celebrating the accomplishments of women at the University of Illinois for its sesquicentennial celebration. And she has founded a project called Tolerance Means Dialogue. It's aimed at bringing together students and thought leaders to find more constructive approaches to living together in a pluralistic society. I don't have time, Robin, to go through the rest of your CV there, or we would run out of time here on the program. But thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Scott, for having me.
I'll start here. This caught my eye. You were cited in a recent Forbes magazine article about this project that you were doing, Tolerance Means Dialogue. What's it about? What's the inspiration for it?
Well, I think the basic premise is that we can find better, more constructive ways to live together. We're all going to be bumping up against each other. We come to the sort of public square with different commitments, whether those are commitments of faith or, you know, considerations of our own sexuality, politics, whatever it might be. And we've got to find laws that allow us to sort of occupy that square together with every person being true to who they are, not sort of, you know, leaving their sort of views or faith commitments or things that are core to them at the, you know, at the door of the public square. So
the word tolerance, that word throws off alarm bells for some people. Do you find pushback from trying to host this kind of thing?
Yeah, well, so the basic idea of the Tolerance Means Dialogues is that the folks that I think are going to find the way forward are really millennials and younger people. They've lived with unprecedented diversity and inclusivity. So my son just graduated from Illinois State, as I was telling you earlier. And, you know, his friend set has, like, all kinds of people in it. And it doesn't seem that anybody has to give up on who they are in order to be friends and to spend time together. So the Tolerance Means Dialogues give scholarships to students to write about what tolerance means to them. And sometimes you check it out at www.tolerancemeans.com. Kids are writing about pluralism. They're writing about having grown up gay in a religious community and what was that like. They're writing about the process of trying to talk to their friends about the things that are important to them. So a lot of people like to think of tolerance as a thin thing, like, oh, well, I just have to, like, accept you. And acceptance is sort of seen as not, you know, very much. But acceptance is actually a pretty significant first step for lots of people, to allow other folks to be who they are in exchange for the idea that they can be who they are.
We're talking with Robin Fretwell-Wilson from the University of Illinois College of Law. When I was growing up in my faith community, the word tolerance was troublesome because there was a lot of folks that felt like it was really a code for accept everybody except, accept everybody except people of faith, because your beliefs are too restrictive, too exclusive, if you will. Is that a problem? Or is that is that a problem on the religious side?
Well, I think sometimes when we use tolerance in a kind of progressive society, think the university setting in many instances, we think the person with older, more traditional views is the one who needs to give way. But when we see what's sort of changed across the United States, we kind of have a checkerboard United States. We have Blue America and Red America. And in Blue America, there's an argument that the folks that really need to be better tolerated and have more room are the people who live there who actually have faith beliefs but find themselves suddenly in the minority. And then you could go to Alabama, which is a deeply religious state, or Mississippi, the single most religious state in America. And there, I think gay folks that who want to kind of express themselves and really, frankly, just have a way to make a living and a place to live, they find themselves in the minority. So America's not this monolithic whole anymore. And I think tolerance, the valence of tolerance, cuts both ways depending on where you are. And the basic premise of the work that I do is it doesn't have to be one side wins and the other side loses. Or even worse, sometimes we think of one side having to crush the other side in order to feel like it wins. We just need to write new scripts for living together, whether we're in Mississippi or we're in New York.
So the Civil Rights Act and all that came is more than 50 years old now. Then, is this a fair statement? We were thinking primarily about race when those laws were enacted, and were issues surrounding LGBT community not even on the radar then?
Yeah, we didn't even have the idea of sort of sexual orientation or gender identity as sort of protected classifications. Then it was really race, and it was to break up what we considered a sort of, a kind of wholesale exclusion of African American persons, not just in the South and all across the country, from things that we consider basic goods like housing or hotels. And if you think about it, the Civil Rights Act, to some extent, did amazing things to change our views, right? We focus now on the problems that we still have that persist around race, and I'm not trying to minimize those by any means at all. But at the sort of edge of my consciousness, having grown up in Virginia, as I said, I remember seeing Woolworths counters where African Americans were seated at one part of the counter. And so that's unacceptable, I think. It is absolutely unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but one thing that happened with the Civil Rights Act is we like to think that we have banned race discrimination everywhere. And in fact, the Civil Rights Act only really reached pockets of our sort of public world. So it regulated gas stations. It regulated sit-down restaurants, but not takeout restaurants. It regulated entertainment venues and hotels, and that was it. We didn't have this sort of single leveling that we think about now when we talk about how no one can be discriminated in the public sphere. Civil Rights Act didn't actually reach everything. It reached little pockets where Congress made findings that we needed to have a single rule of inclusion, or we wouldn't break the kind of segregation model that we were seeing.
We're talking with Robin Fretwell Wilson, professor of law at the University of Illinois, and she's heading up a project called Tolerance Means Dialogue, aimed at having some constructive conversations. LGBT rights and religious beliefs are sometimes, often, however you want to look at it, in conflict. And that's a statement that could be unpacked for a long time. But where the rubber meets the road sometimes, and this has been in the local news over the past couple of years, you're probably aware of the incident of a bed and breakfast up in Paxton that did not want to facilitate a same-sex couple. If I recall, they wanted to get married there. And there's an issue there of someone's beliefs, but then withholding services to somebody. Is the law clear enough there yet on all that kind of stuff? And does everybody get the protection they need right now?
Well, so it's interesting. I was talking about America as a kind of checkerboard. In 28 states, including Illinois, you can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. In some places, they don't reach gender identity. Think trans persons, and they only reach gay folks. But that's 28 states. 32 states, you can discriminate, quote unquote, all day long. And I think the fact that we see these things that necessarily in loggerheads, necessarily in conflict, when I personally believe they don't have to be if we write nuanced laws, the fact that they're set up to be in conflict means that lots of red America is not going to change those laws until we find sort of new scripts, because they see gay rights as somehow crushing their beliefs. So think about the Paxton owners, okay? And going back to the Civil Rights Act, there were ways where we tried to accommodate older beliefs. I'm not saying they were good beliefs, but older beliefs, even within the Civil Rights Act. And the classic example is this fictional widow that was posited during the Civil Rights Act and before by President Kennedy, named Miss Murphy. She didn't really exist, but we posited an Irish widow who could not make money unless she let out rooms in her own house, rented rooms in her own house for people to stay in. And Miss Murphy was actually exempted from the Civil Rights Act. Now, that's an interesting point because, you know, we had this idea that she was a bigot and didn't want to rent to black people. And we exempted her as a way to get the Civil Rights Act passed. Walter Mondale, in fact, stood on the floor of the Senate, and she's exempted in the Fair Housing Act, too, in 1968. And he said it's better to cut off 5% of the loaf and retain 95%, okay? Now, back to the bed and breakfast owners. If they were Miss Murphy, if they only had three rooms for let in their home, under the Civil Rights Act, they would have been exempted. But when they get bigger and it feels like, hey, I'm jumping into the iHotel, why does the iHotel even have an interest in, you know, what I'm doing in my room privately? Then I think most Americans think that any countervailing privacy interest or interest in controlling what's happening in a space that otherwise looks public has fallen away. Now, in those 32 states, this is exactly the problem, though, because they have tons and tons of religious people. So Illinois happens to be in, I think, the bottom 40% of religiosity for the country, but a Mississippi, a Utah, and other places, not so. And so if we want to have non-discrimination laws in those places, we're going to have to think very hard about the religious folks in those places and how do they peacefully coexist. So does that mean every bed and breakfast owner goes out of business and the rest of America if they pass an LGBT rights law? I think the answer has to be no. But then we're going to have to figure out what does it look like to peacefully coexist in that instance.
It's interesting that the subject matter here and the things that you are venturing towards, I think some folks would immediately think that you are pursuing a very progressive agenda, and I think you are, but at the same time, you are actually advocating for those who want to keep their religious integrity, if you will. How do, though, the folks who advocate for LGBT rights and you interact with them view some of this thing? So, for example, I think this has been in the news too, the case of a baker who does not want to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding on the grounds of religious beliefs. Is that seen as just pure discrimination and prejudice, or is that somebody that can be seen as maintaining their own personal integrity for themselves and just saying, hey, I'm sorry, but find a cake somewhere else?
Yeah, so I think, well, let me go back to how this is viewed and whether it's progressive or regressive or whatever. Those words are hard because they sound, again, like win-lose words. I think the key here is that religious people and gay people actually have more in common than not. And what I mean by that is a gay person can't just wake up tomorrow and say, yep, no, I was wrong, I'm not gay. It's just not important to me. Certainly some people change their sexual orientation. Some people have fluid sexual orientations. But for many, many people, that's not something they can give up on. Faith is the same way for many, many people. They can't just leave it at the door like they just, you know, took off a pair of jeans and tossed them at the side of the floor and then they walk out, you know, dressed another way. It's not like that for them. And so for both communities, their belief system and their orientation are completely central to who they are as people. And the basic project needs to be that we respect each other for who they are. Now, some people on the left and the right try to use these laws not to make sure that everybody is well, but to make sure that the other party is not well. So think about folks who have said some really, really damaging things, I think, about transgender folks, that they're basically going to molest people in public bathrooms. I have a new paper that's called The Nonsense About Bathrooms that sort of reviews empirically the evidence of that claim. And it just isn't there. It just is not there. The basic affidavits that were filed in the North Carolina case, the bathroom law case, by sheriffs and longtime FBI agents were about men who molest children. They were not about trans people. And there were sort of a set of factual considerations that they thought would fall into place if you passed a SOGI sexual orientation non-discrimination law. I just don't see it. I don't think, and people can go read my paper, go to RobinFretwellWilson.com, and under publications you can find the nonsense about bathrooms. You can read it for yourself. You can look at the chart of factual claims. They just don't stack up. Now, why would somebody, why all of a sudden has this issue about trans folks erupted the way it has? Because many people see it as making this whole area seem very problematic, seem very scary, and so they can use it to block rights. So, you know, progressive, regressive, whatever word we use, trans folks are with us. Religious folks are with us. Now we need to figure out when they're all together in one place, how are we going to live? So now on your point about the baker, you know, that's an interesting case because every single law that we have seen a baker, a photographer, or someone else sort of, you know, fined or civilly sanctioned under, all of those laws were passed before marriage equality came on the scene. In other words, the legislators were not faced with the idea that we could have a rule that tries to protect people's very deep personal view of marriage. For 51% of Americans, marriage is still seen as a religious institution, if not a sacrament. And so I think if you say no to somebody, like you're saying, I don't want to do your cake for you, you're not trying to block them from getting a cake. You're trying to step to the side of them and have maybe perhaps someone else make that cake. You're not necessarily saying to those folks, you know, I don't like homosexuality. You may be trying to honor a faith tradition which is not so much about the people in front of you, but your relationship to Jesus or God or whoever your faith figure is.
Robin Fretwell Wilson with us here from the University of Illinois College of Law. We'll come back with just a little bit more right after this on A Penny for Your Thoughts. It's A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty in for Brian Barnhart. Just a few minutes longer here with Robin Fretwell Wilson from the U of I College of Law. Before the break there, Robin, we were discussing the classic example and one that's really happened about a baker who doesn't want to bake a cake for a same-sex couple's wedding. And you wanted to expound on that a little more.
Well, I just wanted to make a point. You know, one thing after that happened after Obergefell that I thought was really sad was a case in Tennessee where a hardware store owner was super mad at the court, just thought that the court, you know, had taken something from him. And so he put a sign in his hardware store that said, "No gays allowed." Now, that there's no moral content to a hammer. Like, go and buy a hammer, doesn't matter who you are, who's buying the hammer. And to be told that you can't come into a hardware store to buy a hammer, I just think at the end of the day, that boils down to anti-gay animus. I think the baker is a very different case. I think it's wildly different because the person isn't trying to make a statement about you so much as standing up for a view of marriage. Now, maybe I wouldn't agree with how they're going about that, but I think that's very different than saying, "Don't come in my store." And I feel that if we're going to try to find that peaceful coexistence model where everyone can be true to themselves, in those red states that have yet to pass these laws, we need something like everybody who walks into the baker gets served with dignity. But if there's a specific baker that can't do the service, they can hire a new employee. They can try to find some way to staff around themselves. And that basic idea has been in Title VII since 1972. We actually have a rule that says even for government employees, if you have a religious belief or practice, the government has to try to reasonably accommodate you up to an undue burden. Well, we should allow business owners to try to reasonably accommodate themselves by making sure that everybody who walks in gets served, but if they can't make the cake themselves, to find a way for them to staff that service for the public. Now, maybe that's not a perfect structure, but that's a structure that really is honestly trying to find a way for gay folks to be protected in the law from rank discrimination, like being kicked out of a hardware store, while making sure that the cost of that is not that religious people are driven from the public square.
Robin Fretwell Wilson with us here on A Penny for Your Thoughts, and she heads up the project Tolerance Means Dialogue, and you'll be having one of those dialogues come September 17th at U of I, and there's more information about all that in the project at robinfretwellwilson.com. Appreciate a little bit of your time. We dived into some meaty stuff here. I really appreciate it, and appreciate your desire for some nuance in a subject matter where everyone wants to go to kind of their camps on all this. So hopefully we can do this again.
Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you as well. All right, coming up at the other side of the news, we'll have an open line that'll take you to the bottom of the hour. Then we'll switch gears into the world of tech. Our IT director, Darren Holt, will be here with us if you've got questions for him about your tech needs. Join us. It's News Talk 1400 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Welcome back, everybody, to A Penny for Your Thoughts. Thanks for being along. I appreciate it. I've got you till 11 o'clock. Open line here to the bottom of the hour, and after the news at 10:30, Darren Holt will join us. You may not know Darren, but basically the reason you're hearing my voice right now, and you hear Brian's voice most every day, is that he and Ed Bond run this place. So we'll talk to him about the world of technology, and yeah, we don't have to get into the complexities of what he does here in running networks and major networks and all that, but he may have some tech hacks for you if you've got some problems or questions in the world of technology. Get them ready for him. He may be able to help you. And interesting guy as well. So I'm looking forward to having Darren here on the air with us. It's May 14th. Happy birthday, actress Kate Blanchett. She is 49. Movie writer, director Sofia Coppola is 47. NFL player Rob Gronkowski, 29. Actress Miranda Cosgrove is 25. Thanks to Robin Fretwell Wilson. She was on the program with us in the last half hour, and I appreciated the care she's taken here with some tough issues at times where the world of faith and rights, individual rights, can conflict sometimes. And but I appreciated it wasn't just one-sided, as nuanced. And she's advocating for some laws to become more nuanced as well and all that. So, yeah, it was good to have her. Tolerance Means Dialogue, good conversations that are starting up. If you have any thoughts on what you heard from her, or questions or comments, you can certainly join us here on the phones, 356-9397. 70 years ago today, the State of Israel was proclaimed by Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion as a British rule in Palestine came to an end, and no coincidence that today the embassy for the U.S. opening up in Jerusalem, as Donald Trump moved that, the president moving it from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It has sparked some protests and clashes today. Saw a quick headline that there's been a number of people dead and as a result of some violence around this whole thing. Your thoughts on that? Is this a good move? Bolton had said that it's a good move and it's a part of the reality. And there's, of course, a lot of folks that believe Jerusalem is the rightful capital of Israel. Palestinians lay claim to Jerusalem as well, and this is problematic for them. So, your thoughts on all this? Is this a good day in foreign relations in the Middle East or not? You can weigh in at 356-9397. We're following Illinois men's golf today in the regional play, first of 3 days of play out at the par 71 Scarlet Course at Ohio State University. Nick Hardy is 2 under. Dylan Meyer is 2 under as well. The team as a whole is tied for the lead at 3 under. The top three will advance to nationals. So good luck to the men's golf team. Illinois softball ended their season over the weekend. Illinois baseball with a strong weekend, winning 2 out of 3 at Michigan, their final Big Ten series coming up at home starting Thursday night against Nebraska. To the phones, Dave is on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
You were talking about the movement of the capital to Jerusalem.
Well, the embassy to Jerusalem.
The embassy, yes. But it was established in 1995 by the Congress to do so. And it has been waived by all the presidents up to this point. So this is something that was enacted 23 years ago that is just being now done, finally. So everybody says that Donald Trump's moved it. Well, it wasn't him. It was actually the Congress in 1995, and I don't think people realize that.
I did not know that. That is an interesting, and I wonder what motivated it at the time.
Well, at the time, you did have, it was a Republican takeover of the Congress in 1994, Newt Gingrich, and they said that, and it was overwhelmingly passed by both sides, by both houses of the Congress and by both sides of the aisle. And it was not instituted for one reason, and that was because of perceived security problems.
Was it known that that would be, I wonder if that was known and it was more seen as a symbolic gesture, or if Congress really wanted it.
I think that was the case. I think they wanted to recognize that the capital was actually Jerusalem and not Tel Aviv, and that they wanted to move the embassy to the capital, and that at that point in time they said, let us do that. And then due to security reasons, all the presidents since then, and you're talking Bill Clinton, Bush, Obama, have said, no, we are not going to move it, and have waived that that bill that was passed by the Congress.
Well, it has sparked some violence today, and, you know, well, and that's, I guess, you know, whose fault is that, right?
I see both sides of that, too. You know, yeah. I mean, if I'm living here and the Miami of Ohio tribe came and said that they wanted their land back in my town, you better believe I'm going to protect my space, my homeland, where I have lived and my family has lived for five generations. These people have lived there for 1,000 years. You know, they have been had that land, and now you're kicking them out. I understand how they feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by the same token, if you're going to go start throwing stones and you're going to start throwing Molotov cocktails at people along a border, there's probably going to be some retaliation, and it might be your life that might be in danger. So, I mean, I do see both sides of the issue, and I have no solution to it either. And I am willing to say that. I have no solution to the problem.
I don't think you're alone in people that feel they have no solution to Middle East peace.
But I mean, for 2,000 years or 3,000 years, they have been fighting over there. And to think that we can end it and to say that this is a step back in the peace process, well, I understand how people can say that, but honestly, this is a process that's been going on for thousands of years, and in our country now for 60 years, you know, since 1948 when Israel was instituted as a nation. So, I mean, how are you going to solve the problem? But I thought it was really interesting that this is not something that Trump actually did. It's just that he is not waiving what the Congress did in 1995 now.
Yeah, I appreciate that context and backstory, Dave. Call again, would you?
Yep. Thanks a lot, Scott. Have a good day.
Thank you. 356-9397 is the phone number. Israeli fire has killed at least 41 Palestinians during mass protests along the Gaza border. It's the deadliest day of violence since the devastating 2014 cross-border war. It is casting a pall over Israel's festive inauguration of the new U.S. embassy in contested Jerusalem. Penny, for your thoughts, it's an open line here to the bottom of the hour. Next half hour, bring your tech questions to the program with Darren Holt from News Gazette Media. It's a Penny for Your Thoughts.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
Yeah, it was sad news on this day in 1998 as Old Blue Eyes passed away at the age of 82. Frank Sinatra, also dying this same day in 2015, was legendary blues guitarist B.B. King. He died at the age of 89, and Rita Hayworth passed away in 1987 on this day, age of 68. She had Alzheimer's disease. So what's going on this day in history? It's a penny for your thoughts. Scott Beatty here filling in for Brian Barnhart. Coming up on the other side of the news, Darren Holt will be here. He's director of IT for News Gazette Media. And it's interesting transformation here in our building, as Darren Holt has become a bit of an audio engineer because of our new systems here and when we merged and new equipment. And our chief engineer, Ed Bond, has become a bit of an IT guy, as these two worlds have suddenly merged that we're used to be a little bit more separate. So anyway, Darren, I've enjoyed getting to know him, and he's got some life hacks and then when it comes to tech, and he'll take your tech questions, and we'll do that in the next half hour. All right, men's golf, we were talking about that. They're in the regionals, and Illinois baseball starts against Nebraska on Thursday, their final home series of the year in Big Ten play. The Illini clinched a spot in Omaha in the Big Ten tournament that comes up the week after this. And I don't know, Ed Bond's going out there to see the Illini at TD Ameritrade Ballpark. That's also where the College World Series takes place. So looking forward to that. I'm sure Ed always excited to go somewhere. Can't stay still too long. If you want to weigh in here before this half hour is out, you can. 356-9397. I was telling you about my appreciation that Brooklyn Nine-Nine got picked up by NBC after Fox announced it canceled. Jack texts in, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, worst show on TV. I guess it's not for everybody. Thanks for weighing in there. And if you have any other thoughts on that or any other subject, you can certainly do that along the way. Thanks as well to Robin Fretwell Wilson. She is a professor of law at the U of I, and she offered her thoughts on the nuances of protecting LGBT community and also religious rights. 214 texter, I think responding to Dave about why, if Congress approved moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem back in 1995, why nobody actually did it. And he said it's because every other president was a coward. Bill says, if you pass a law requiring people to have to render services to others who go against their beliefs, would Jewish bakers have to bake for a neo-Nazi and black bakers for white supremacists? If a white man if a man puts up a no gay sign in front of his store, the market will get rid of him. People won't shop there. Bill, I guess Bill advocating there for no need for law, just let people sort of take care of it themselves. To the phones here before we head to the news, and it's Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Scott. I want to address this CIA nominee, Gina Haspel. Last week, Stan called in, made a whole bunch of accusations about her, none of which were true. Concerning the waterboard torture that they use, this woman did not make the decision to implement that. She was low-level middle management at the time that decision was made. She is an excellent choice for the CIA director. A lot of the covert operations she's been involved in, they cannot release because of the possibility of compromising other agents still active in the field. So the fact that he wants, well, more information about her, well, sometimes you just can't have that information. John McCain, he's against torture, but you need to remember that John McCain was tortured for the sake of being tortured. The fact that they use waterboarding doesn't injure the individual. They may think they're going to drown, but they don't. And when I was in Southeast Asia, I saw things happen over there that when the interrogator was done, the individual being interrogated would have loved to have had some water poured up his nose. I won't go into details or graphic details, but it obtained information, saved American and allied lives and property. And I'm not 100% in favor of it. And there has to be a line drawn as to what can be applied. But I don't think the waterboarding is that terrible an ordeal to put them through to get the information they deserve. If you'll recall 9/11 and what happened, and watching those people have to jump out of the top of the World Trade Center because they had a choice of either being burned alive or falling to their deaths. They chose falling to their deaths. I ask these people that are so anti-torture or interrogation to look at their children and grandchildren and think, how would they feel if that was their child or grandchild that was in that position?
Fair point. Hey, Joe, I got to run, but I appreciate it. And it sounds like you served as well. And I don't know if that was by choice or by or not, but thank you for that as well. Appreciate you weighing in. Time for news. We switch gears to technology when we come back with Darren Holt, News Gazette Media's director of IT. But first, local news with Michael Kaiser. A penny for your thoughts. It's 10:36. I'm Scott Beatty, filling in for Brian Barnhart. He's back in tomorrow and here for the rest of the week. I'm very pleased to have here the man that could bring down the whole operation, all with just the click of a mouse, very easily. It's Darren Holt. He's the director of IT here for News Gazette Media. When we moved down here from our previous location at 2301, your face was on the front of the paper, and it was deservedly
yes.
Show. Yeah, you were
not in the police blotter for a change.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, because you were very instrumental in bringing this whole thing together, and I mentioned it before that we've all, our engineer, audio engineer, Ed Bond, has suddenly had become a quick study on the world of internet or information technology, and you had become a quick study in the world of audio engineering, because this is a whole new way of doing radio, essentially.
Essentially, yes. I mean, we had I had some tangential experience with the radio operation with some of our, you know, servers and other equipment, but never had to understand the radio operation. In fact, I was very glad about that. It's one of those things I didn't have to know about. I have to know about so much in this job, but radio was like, other people take care of that. And when the move came down and we were essentially going to be building a radio operation from scratch, one of the things I quickly realized, like, oh, I have to learn how to run a radio operation now. And everyone had to learn the same thing, because while you guys knew how to run a radio operation, you didn't know how to run a digital, you know, software audio over IP based radio operation. So we all learned a lot of stuff in a very short amount of time. And even if I say so myself, the studios and the equipment look fantastic. Everything works. And I'm just going to keep crossing my fingers every day that it stays that way. But yes, your point is well made, and Ed has been crucial in keeping us going. And we're all learning things together, which is great fun. And it gives me the opportunity to be on the radio. So that stokes my ego, which is fantastic.
Well, we appreciate it. And it's pretty remarkable, too. And, you know, not to get too under the hood, but what was before just audio cables and wires everywhere is now a couple of Ethernet cords that goes into one big hub and some boxes upstairs and servers and distributes everything back out, and it makes everything a lot smoother and fancier. But the problem is, it's harder to problem solve if you don't know what's going on. You need new levels of expertise.
We have a lot more flexibility now. It used to be that if you wanted to get an audio source to an audio destination, you had to run a physical cable. No physical cable, no connection. Now everything goes into a central hub, and you can connect any audio source to anything else, to any destination. We could put, you know, we could put Scott's iPhone on the air right now if we wanted to. We could put, you know, something at my desk upstairs. We could pipe it through. You know, there's you know, so many ways we can do this. But as you say, when there is a problem, is it with the automation system? Is it with the audio IVP system? Is it with the satellite receivers? You know, we have, you know, there's so many ways that things are interconnected. It used to be like, well, that's the radio guy's problem. They'll figure it out. Now it's like, well, is it an IT problem? Is it a radio problem? The lines are so blurred as to not exist anymore, which is fun. It's both. It's both. It's none. It's very quantum. It's we don't know what the problem is until we examine it. It's Schrodinger's cat.
Now, Darren Holt is here with us. He's the director of internet. I keep saying internet information technology.
Information. Sorry, yeah. Technically, my title is IT manager.
IT manager. Oh,
and
yeah.
I believe they're adding a bit extra now that says AOIP specialist, which audio over IP specialist, to better describe that my role is that I'm straddling the lines, if you will.
Now, one thing I was concerned about bringing you on here is, would we need a translator?
Well, it's not TV, so I don't have subtitles. But I'm hoping that, you know, since I'm speaking English and you guys purport to speak English, that I'm being understood. So if you guys were speaking American, I would have to back off. But since you chose to speak English, I feel like I can say whatever I want.
Well, we really thank you.
Glad to be here, Scott.
No, I'm saying you come here via the United Kingdom.
That's where I'm from originally, yes. Yeah, I'm now an American citizen.
Yeah, and you made that choice just a few years ago, right?
That's true. I first came to America in 2000 on what was called an intra-company transfer visa, which meant that I could stay only as long as my visa lasted and only working for a particular company that had transferred me from another office in Europe, in England in that case. I later came back on what's called a fiancé visa because, as I like to tell people who want the short version, I came for a job but stayed for a girl. And that girl is now my wife, and we have two beautiful children, and we're very happy. And I was up late, you know, celebrating Mother's Day last night, and boy, was she mad when I got in. That's a joke, honey. I love you. And then, you know, it's a very long, complicated process to become first a resident, temporary resident, and then become a permanent resident. And the permanent residency is one of those oxymorons because permanent residency only lasts for 10 years, and then you have to renew it. And so I knew I was going to have to do some paperwork in 2018 because that's when my permanent residency would be up for renewal. So when 2016 rolled around, and I just decided, like, let's get the paperwork done before things potentially change. And so I became a citizen about a week after the election was when I took my oath of citizenship.
So next presidential election, you'll get to vote.
That's right. I've already voted in the local elections, the primaries. I'm going to vote in the midterms. You put a ballot in front of me, I'm going to check boxes. I'm going to be voting every time.
That's good. It all impacts your life. So
it does.
Good.
It does.
All right, we want to help things that impact your life with the world of technology. So, hey, if you've got a question, Darren's doing this for free. He's basically offering free technical service. Now, if your laptop's broken and you're not sure how to fix it, you know, I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. But
that's not something I can usually do over the radio.
Right,
think,
but you know. If you've got a question about, hey, how does this do? Because one of the things you've done, and I want to get into this on the other side of the break, is you've jerry-rigged some interesting, I call them life hacks. You call them solutions.
I do call them solutions because hacks has a somewhat negative connotation in this day and age. So I would, and it's nothing I'm doing is untoward or illegal. It's a solution that is commercially available, Scott.
I see. All right, we'll get the proper language here. But if you have any questions, we'll get into that. Let us know. 356-9397 is the number to call. You can text us as well. 351-5357. That's Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Back with Darren Holt after this. All right, it's a penny for your thoughts. I almost said welcome back to Sports Talk. And if that comes later in the day on Tuesday through Friday. Scott Beatty here in for Brian Barnhart. He's back tomorrow. We're visiting with IT manager Darren Holtz. This is the final week for you to show your support for your favorite businesses in the massive News Talk 1400 People's Choice competition. Take a couple minutes, would you? Vote at WDWS.com, the People's Choice from News Gazette Media and Central Illinois Credit Union. All right, Mr. Holtz, make my life better at home. I have Netflix. And I like it. I've got the Amazon Prime Video as well. But sometimes things have come and gone that I wanted to see and can't get to anymore. And sometimes those subscription services add up.
Yes, it's true. I have a similar situation. I have Amazon Prime myself for a variety of factors, not just the 2-day shipping and all the video that's available on there, but also for the unlimited cloud photo storage, which a lot of people don't realize is a benefit, meaning that you can save all your important family pictures up in your Amazon account so that if you ever have a disaster or your computer dies, they can exist somewhere else. And as I say, that Amazon provides you unlimited storage as long as it's a photo file. It's not for video files or music files. So you can't store your entire iTunes catalog up there, but your important family pictures you can actually store up in Amazon's cloud.
It used to be, you know, when it was all print photos, and you wanted to save those, and you had, okay, I don't want water damage or fire, whatever, that could really ruin something. But then it became, all right, it's on my computer.
It's safe now.
It's safe now, but that's not the case.
Not the case. If anything is going to fail in your computer, it's going to be your hard drive. You want to have your data backed up somewhere. In fact, we tend to follow in IT the 3-2-1 rule. If it's important, you want to have 3 copies of it, in 2 different places, at least one of them off-site.
So one more time.
3-2-1. 3 copies of important data, preferably on 2 different storage mediums, meaning it could be an optical disk or a computer disk, and at least one of them being off-site, meaning not in your house, because it's all very well saying, I have a backup hard drive. It's in my safe downstairs. But if you have a disaster, a flood, or a fire, well, then both your copies are gone.
Now, the cloud storage, I assume, since you use it, you seem it, and there's other services I think you could, you know.
There's lots of them. There's CrashPlan, Dropbox. There's
Carbonite,
Carbonite, lots of them.
You trust them.
At a certain point, you have to just put your faith in the technology. I mean, nothing is 100% secure. There's no such thing. If someone really wants to get in and there's a security hole, they'll find a way. But, you know, my philosophy is if it's stuff that I particularly care about, I'm going to have to put my faith in someone somewhere. But I still don't put super sensitive information in the cloud. I don't put social security numbers or, you know, passwords. I don't save in the cloud. Those I keep either in my head or on a server that I control. And, you know, I control several.
Now, passwords is, I've heard some people use this thing, LastPass, I think it's called.
LastPass, KeePass, there are a lot of password stories. They actually keep it encrypted, so even on their end, they couldn't get in. All they would have is the encrypted file. So those, I've never used those, so I can't speak to them in detail, but I know a lot of my colleagues rely on them. They use very, very long and complex passwords they don't have to then remember because they have KeePass running on the local system putting in the password for them.
But the question is, does it work if you, okay, I need to go access my bank account, but I'm not on my regular computer or tablet. You know, I'm going to access it from
somewhere else. I believe you can log into your account through a browser, probably with two-factor authentication so that you will get an email saying, hey, someone's trying to log in. Is that you? And then you can decrypt your password on the fly and get it if you need it. Now, a lot of bank accounts these days, particularly I use this with my accounts, is I access my phone with Touch ID, which is my fingerprint. Unless someone's taken a meat cleaver to me, I feel pretty secure about. if they have, I've got other problems.
that's true. Or put super glue over your fingers.
Getting it off a wine glass or something. Now, you mentioned Netflix earlier. This is one of my favorite solutions, life hacks, if you will. I'm quite frugal, so I don't subscribe to Netflix all the time.
For those of you who don't speak English, that means cheap.
thank you, translator Bailey. cheap, yes, very, very concise. I use a piece of software called PlayOn, and that's available from playon.tv, spelled just like you think it is. And I paid the one-off fee for it, which back in the day was, I think, $40. It's now up to $70, but they have sales all the time, so you can pick it up for less than that if you catch it at the right time. What this is essentially a TiVo, like a DVR, but for streaming sites. And you're thinking, like, why do I need that if I have, you know, if I pay all these subscriptions? Well, the way I use Netflix is about once a year, I will sign up for Netflix and record all the content I want to a local hard drive, and then I can cancel my Netflix, and I still have it available on my computer. And the extra benefit of this is now I have it as an MP4 file, and I can transfer that to another computer. I can play it on my Roku downstairs. I can put it on the kids' iPad so that they can watch it in the car, which, you know, that's one of the limitations of Netflix until we have Wi-Fi everywhere. You can't do it on long car journeys, and you and I both know you need to keep the kids distracted on a long car journey.
Yeah, a friend of mine bought a minivan with the whole package of video and all that stuff. And I said, you know, when we were kids, we just had to be bored in the car riding. He goes, yeah, and our parents suffered for it. So I'm
no
glad.
Kidding. kidding.
Darren Holt is with us. He's the IT manager here at News Gazette Media. And have a time for a question or two from you if you want some advice in the world of technology. Let's see. So you record these things and they take up pretty considerable space, right? So you got to get a hard drive that...
They can. You can pick up, you know, an 8 terabyte hard drive, an external drive for about $120 these days, which is not a huge expense, particularly when you think of, you know, Netflix is going to cost you at least that in a year, and Amazon's, you know, Amazon Prime is now up to $120 a year. So it depends how serious you want to get. If you just want a few things, then you might want to get PlayOn's subscription where you just pay $1.99 a month and just download a few things that you want to have offline. The way I do it, because I'm a geek and I go all in on this stuff, is I have a unique computer sitting in my basement with two massive hard drives in it and then an external hard drive copying the stuff. And I have terabytes. I could watch TV at my home for several weeks without running out of content. I have things like Breaking Bad downloaded that I've never gotten around to watching, but will at some point. And, you know, more movies than you can shake a stick at, assuming that's your idea of a good time. But then when I go on vacation and I need to have stuff for the kids, yes, I put stuff on the iPad, but I can also then take the external hard drive with us, hook it up to a laptop. And then, you know, we sometimes even take a Roku device with us on vacation at night. It's sometimes nice after a day at the beach to wind down with the kids watching a movie, which yeah. you can do on the, you know, in the beach house or in the hotel or whatever. And it's just, it's a little slice of home just to keep the routines in line, if that's what needs to happen to calm the kids for bedtime.
And this is no different than what you used to do when you would record a movie off TV with a VCR, right?
Exactly. It's exactly the same principle. You know, the I'm accessing it through a browser. I just happen to be capturing the stream. All the videos don't have digital rights management or DRM, which means you can use them anywhere, but they are topped and tailed with a device with a warning that says this was recorded by Darren Holt at my IP and is not supposed to be redistributed, because I'm not doing that, because that would be like $250,000 fine and several years in jail. This is for my personal family use only.
Yeah, we don't want you in jail yet, because again, you run the whole ship.
I'm still pretty useful.
All right. Well, hey, this was fun.
I enjoyed it.
I think some people have been benefited, I hope. And if not, we had some fun here, right?
Maybe we'll put a transcript up later for those who don't speak English.
Touche. All right, Darren Holt, IT manager here at News Gazette Media. We're back to wrap things up here on A Penny for Your Thoughts right after this. Down the stretch we come here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. He is back tomorrow. We'll be talking about the Eastern Illinois golf outing. And then also we'll be having an open line the rest of the time. So Brian's back. If there was something you wanted to weigh in on today that you didn't get a chance to do so, you can certainly do it tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who texted and called in as well. And a couple of you called in right as we took a break with Darren Holt with some tech questions, and we couldn't get to it. So that tells me maybe we'll do it again. And there may be some folks out there who want some help in that area. Thank you, Ed Bond, our producer-engineer behind the scenes. I'll be back with you for the News Hour later today at 4 o'clock, and then Steve Kelly and the guys from the News Gazette sports page are in with you at 11 o'clock. CBS News is next. It's News Talk 1400 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana.